When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In a parallel universe, this month's guest might be a huge rock star in Britain. But luckily for country music fans, he stayed in ours. I'm Tom Maley, and this is Write You a Song. 30 number one singles as a writer and producer, six of which he wrote in 2015 alone. He's won multiple BMI and ACM Songwriter of the Year awards. His producing chops helped him earn a CMA. He works with the biggest names in Nashville, including songwriters like Shane McAnally and Josh Osborne, and artists like Dierks Bentley, Brett Eldridge, Jake Owen, and Darius Rucker. He just released an EP of solo material that includes a co-write with Ed Sheeran, and he used to party with The Who. It's an honor and privilege to welcome Ross Copperman to Write You a Song.
You wrote your first song when you were 12. Were you a musical kid before that? Did you grow up in like a musical household?
Yeah, you know, I didn't. My grandmother was a classical pianist, but I never met her. She passed away when my mother was a child, and I'd always heard about her playing classical piano. And so I started kind of banging on the piano that was sitting around our house when I was a kid. And you know, I guess my mom probably wanted to relive some of that, the piano that she grew up listening to as a child in her house. And so she encouraged me to take lessons. I took classical piano my whole life, and I loved it and I hated it at the same time. But thankfully, it led me to songwriting, and I couldn't imagine my life without that.
Can you remember when you first started, you know, playing with the piano and you were a kid? Did you feel sort of like, can you remember if you felt drawn to it?
Yeah, it was definitely my escape. It was definitely, you know, I grew up in a volatile household, so it was a nice escape for me to be able to put my head down and just improv. So I would just get lost in making up my own songs, just instrumentally, you know. Like when I was finished with my classical piano, I would just kind of just create a movie in my head, and I would, you know, score the whole movie for an hour a day,
wow.
You know?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of what I would do, and it was just kind of my escape, and I encourage my kids to learn how to improv at a very young age, because I just feel like it's an important part. It's kind of everything, you know?
Is it kind of a musical version of journaling, where you're just, instead of your thought?
Oh, yeah, man. That's a great, you know, I actually used to play jazz piano at a country club in Roanoke. And I used to literally, I got really into jazz, and I would literally watch as each person came in, and I would adjust the song to fit what I thought that person's personality was.
No way.
So if somebody came bouncing in all happy, I would play a super bouncy kind of little tune, and I'll just kind of make it up as I went. And then somebody came in kind of looking a little dark or down, I would play a somber. I would do this for 4 hours a night. I was playing at this country club, and really where I learned how to improv and learned how to, it's probably where I learned how to write songs and channel emotions from people, you know.
Did those people know you were creating soundtracks for them?
Sometimes I thought, wow, I wonder if this person is catching on to that. I'm playing their theme song right now. But I don't think they did. I've actually never talked about that. It was something I've actually never even told anybody I used to do that.
That is super funny. Interesting. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you still do that? Like if the studio engineer comes walking in and you're plinking around?
God, I don't. And it's kind of what I used to love the most about music, was that freedom you'd feel. And I feel that in writing songs and being able to create something from nothing. But playing jazz and improv was such a big part of my life. I just don't do it anymore.
Now, here we are talking about the music, but the lyric writing is also so important. And you are so good at that. And we'll get to some of your 30 number ones here in just a little bit, but I love the story about the first song that you wrote when you were 12. Could you please share that?
Yeah, I wrote a song for this project called Odyssey of the Mind, which was a competition where you kind of put together a play and you prepare the music and everything. And we were 12 years old, and I wrote this song, and I was dressed up as a whale, and I played this song called Find Your Own Sea or something like that. I can't remember, but I played and sang this song. I was 12. You know, a 12-year-old nowadays, you'd be like, oh, my God, of course they did that, because kids are like, I feel like kids these days are a lot better than we were when we were kids. But I played it, and the judges disqualified us because they thought that my mom wrote the song. So that was kind of my first taste of reality. Like, wow, okay, the world is a little cruel. You know, like, that's crazy. They didn't believe me. And so my mom never let that rest and was always like, you wrote that song. And that's probably the tipping off point for me to pursue that more.
When did you know that music was going to be your career?
Probably in college. I took a songwriting class. The first class I'd ever taken regarding songwriting. I didn't know that was even an option. You know, I didn't know that writing songs was something you could do. Although I always grew up hearing about this guy named Tommy Lee James, who was from Roanoke, Virginia. And I always heard this big shot dude, Tommy Lee James, was a big hit country songwriter from Roanoke, Virginia. And I thought, God, that is so cool. That guy went from my small town to Nashville and he made it.
If you see her, tell her the light's still on. Tears will fall sometimes. Life ain't always beautiful, but it's a beautiful ride.
It was always in the back of my mind, Tommy Lee. And I took this class in college, and I started playing shows and feeling that energy of a crowd. I started building a little bit of a thing at JMU, and I started touring, and those are definitely the moments where I realized, wow, okay, you know, I love this. This is definitely what I have to do. You know, I'm giving it everything I have. And my parents were very supportive, which was a huge part of it.
Was that right around the time when you stalked John Mayer into a restaurant after one of his shows? And
Yeah. I was the biggest John fan in college, as most of us were. And I went to see him at Roanoke College right before he blew up. It was like right before his TRL debut. He even said in his show, he's like, y'all, I'm about to blow this world's mind. He said this in his concert. Like, I'm about to blow every woman's mind in this country. He said something like that. I was like, wow, okay. He's a little cocky, but he must know something we don't know here. So I followed him to this little restaurant called Mac and Bob's. And I kind of walked to this table. I was like, John, I'm just such a big fan of yours. And then he said something slightly crude as a joke, and then he invited me to sit down and join him for dinner. And I did, and he suggested a book to me called Writing Better Lyrics by Pat Pattison, which that book also was a huge pinnacle for me in changing my life and realizing, wow, you can really hone it. I never used to focus on lyrics, and that was the first moment I realized, wow, lyrics are important, and this is how you get better at writing them. I actually ran into John about 3 years ago at a Grammy party in LA and told him this story. And he's like, well, at least I did something right. Tell me to buy the book, you know?
And then I think you're the second country songwriter that I've had on here who actually spent time over in Europe. I had James T. Slater on a while back, and he spent a few years over there. And and you went, but you didn't go as a songwriter and as a backup band member. You went and you actually had a singing career. And your stuff, I heard your debut album, and it's really good. It's really melodic.
Oh,
it's power pop, like late 90s. It's just, it's in that sweet
That's
spot.
That's what I grew up on.
She wanders all alone. This is all she's ever really known. A stranger in a skin. Nothing more. It's all she's ever been. These words across the page, it helps to ease the pain. And she cries, nobody out there.
zero.
Yeah, but yeah. It's really, really good. And I was like, I'm listening to this going, what happened? So what did happen?
You know, I've learned so much since then. It was mismanaged. I was a cocky 23-year-old that I thought I could write all my songs by myself. I didn't need to co-write. I thought I knew what songs I should put out. It's the reason I'm able to be a producer and a songwriter and help young artists, because I lived it. And I'm able to see the mistakes that I made along the way, which I can see it so clearly now, you know. And I'm able to help young artists, guide them on their journey and not make the same mistakes I made. You know, but if it had gone well there, who knows what I'd be doing. I don't know what, I wouldn't have my family now, and I wouldn't be writing country songs, you know, and so I'd probably be a washed up British power pop artist, you know.
Well, let me ask you this then, and I hope you don't mind me asking, because it's going down kind of a serious path, but I know that you had some trouble with drinking and stuff when you were over there, and you fell in with kind of a wrong crowd and stuff. And again, you're young, you're a kid. When you're 23, 24, 25 years
23.
Old, 20, you are a kid, and country music has just seen Morgan Wallen kind of go through this same thing. And there's so much more of a spotlight now on young artists. Is that the kind of mistake that you're talking about recognizing? Well, obviously Morgan's was, it was there for the world to see, and he's, you know, doing what he can to atone. And I'm sure that he will at some point, but what are your thoughts on that? And the temptations that young artists face?
I just was in this rock and roll culture. And, you know, my drummer in my band was Ben Townsend, and Pete Townsend's nephew. And so he would always drag me around to Who shows and go see, you know, hanging out with Roger Daltrey backstage at the Royal Albert Hall, and called me by my first name, you know, Roger and Pete Townsend. You know, I was Ben's buddy, and I was just hanging out with these guys. I left a Pearl Jam show with Eddie Vedder in his limo from Wembley Stadium. We left Wembley in Eddie's limo and went back to Ben's apartment and just hung out and partied all night with Eddie Vedder. You know, that's just like, I was kind of like emerged into this rock star life. And I was just a 23-year-old kid from Virginia and just becoming not the best version of myself and kind of nearly imploding and realizing I literally have to leave here. I have to like go back to Virginia and kind of reset.
It's easy to lose yourself in that.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a critical time for, especially for young, and not just young artists, but young athletes. You see it too, where they're suddenly hit with success or something that looks like success, and everything becomes distorted.
Exactly. So I was 23, got a record deal, going to the UK. All my friends in Virginia are like, oh my God, like you've made it. And I go over there for 2 years and I had mild success, but it didn't really go, you know, the way it should have. And so I come back to Virginia feeling like a failure. You know, I went, everyone's thinking, oh my God, he's like doing all this stuff. But like in my mind, I completely struck out. And so I'm just like, God, what am I going to do? And I just realized at that point, I'm a songwriter first. And that's always been my passion. And producing records has always been my passion. And so I knew I had to go to Nashville.
Do you ever talk to young artists that are upcoming to say, hey, look, you know,
always, man.
What's like the number one thing you tell them then?
Well, it's always, you know, it's why I've been able to be a producer all these years and kind of just help young artists. And I always tell artists and writers to call me, just call me and talk to me. You know, a lot of people don't realize that I've been in those shoes. You know, I was in your shoes. Thinking that I could write all the songs myself and thinking that I knew everything I should be doing as an artist, you know, and I always just encourage artists to trust their managers and trust their teams and surround themselves with good people that ground them and don't just tell them yes. You know, I've never been like a producer or a writer to just tell artists yes, you know. I'm the guy that's just like, no, that's not good. Like, you shouldn't do that song. This is why, you know?
What drew you to country then? Because you were, here you are living the rock and roll lifestyle. Doesn't sound like you grew up steeped in country music or country tradition. Yeah. How did you hang a left into country?
I always knew the way I wrote songs was a very country style of writing songs. It was telling a story. Structurally, I was writing, I always felt like my songs fit country and structurally. I took a trip to Nashville. I actually made my first record in Nashville before I even got a record deal. This was in college. The record was called Believe with Phil Vassar's keyboard player, and Clay Ryder brought me to Nashville to the EMI demo studio, and I made my first record there. So I had this soft spot in my heart for Nashville, because that's kind of where it all started for me, to be honest, before anything else. I'm talking like OG Nashville. That was like the old school Nashville days, man. Mm-hmm. Which that EMI building is no longer there now. It's a hotel or something, but as is much of Music Row. But so I just came here and I found a community of people that loved writing songs as much as I did. And they really embraced me, and that weren't about partying or drugs or, you know, like it was a good community. And it just, it felt right. I knew it was right.
You said that you felt like you had to kill off the singer performer side of yourself before completely, becoming a Nashville singer songwriter, or not singer songwriter, but Nashville songwriter producer.
I had this feeling this whole time that, God, if any of these artists find out that I'm an artist too, they're not going to want to record my songs. Why would they record my songs if I'm trying to be an artist too and compete with them? And so, I even encourage new producers to do this, because you honestly have to give all of you to that artist, or else you're not doing them a proper service. You know, if I made those three Dierks Bentley albums when I was trying to fully pursue my artist career and touring, that wouldn't have been fair to Dierks, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is a fine line. And, now I am back in the artist seat. I'm doing it again. I have a record deal again, and I have a really good team. But I'm able to manage it all better now, you know, and it's a different world these days.
And at that time, as you were getting yourself established, you had to focus 100% on the songwriting aspect of things. When did you realize?
Yes.
When you were in Nashville and writing, that you could be good at this?
I think when I met John Knight and we wrote the song called Glass. The Thompson Square was Glass, and the reaction from our publisher was just like overwhelming. And I knew at that moment, like, wow, we could write songs we love, and this could work.
Trying to live in love with a heart that can't be broken is like trying to see the light with eyes that can't be opened. Yeah, we both carry baggage we picked up on our way. So if you love me, do it gently, and I will do the same. We may shine, we may shatter, we may be picking up the pieces here on after. We are fragile, we are human, we are shaped by the light we let through us. We break fast, 'cause we are grace, 'cause we are grace.
Over your career, you seem like you have written quite a bit with certain artists more than others.
Sure.
Dierks is a great example. And I want to talk about some of your terrific songs with him, but also Brett Eldridge. I mean, the run that he recently had, you were a huge part of that. Do you, just like people fall into friendships, is it the same way with songwriting? You find people that you just...
Totally. You know, and me and Brett became friends very early on, in the very early days. We were running around Music Row together. So we always had that unique bond, and then we just started writing songs, and we just kind of stumbled into songs like Beat of the Music.
Well, I just met you a couple hours ago, my last night in town. Hey, wouldn't you know, I'd get hooked on a girl with blue diamond eyes down here in Mexico. Oh, now you're walking up asking me to dance, smiling that smile and reaching out your hand. Well, there's a move or two I'd like to show.
Drunk on Your Love, just writing what we love to write, not really knowing what we were doing.
It's not in the whiskey, tequila, or the wine. It's all about the touch and the fire in your eyes. It gets me fumbling, always stumbling through a haze. I got plenty to do, just laying here with you all day.
Around into it and had a few hits and did it a few more times and are still as good of friends now as we were then, you know?
I know Brett a little bit. Creatively, he is just a jumping bean. It's amazing. And I've heard the same said about you. Does it get a little chaotic sometimes, or do the two of you together, does your electricity sort of cancel each other out?
Oh, that's so funny. You know, and it's kind of what I always do with artists. I follow their lead. That's kind of what my role is. You're there for that artist to follow their lead and kind of pull out of them what they're wanting to do and say.
Are you more of the lyric guy or the melody guy?
You know, I generally will bring in a vibe that I've made with a mumbling, some fake words and some chords and a vibe. And it's funny, Zoom writing has turned me more into a lyric person over the past few, and it just depends on who I'm writing with. You know, if I'm writing with Shane McAnally and Josh Osborne, well, then no, I'm just going to, like, you find your lane, and that's what makes for successful co-writes. But if you're writing with someone else, maybe you are a little more lyric, you know, like in a pop write. I can bring, like, my, you know, 15 years of Nashville experience to writing lyrics in a pop write in a different way, or you just find where you fit in the puzzle and go and let everyone else do what they do best. You know, that's what I found works.
You have a great quote about writing with Shane and Josh. And I think it's something effect of when they start writing, I shut up.
I do. Because it's like, these are two of the best to ever do it, like ever in history. And, you know, I feel like when writes don't go well, it's when everyone's just trying to step on each other and outright each other, or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've just always been a proponent of bringing the best out of others.
What it sounds like to me, and this is held true with a lot of the songwriters too that I've talked with, is it's so important to be malleable. It's so important to be versatile and to kind of read the room. And like you said earlier, find the lane that you need to be in for that particular day. That just seems like it's
exactly
one of the biggest keys to songwriting.
It really is. And it's one of the hardest things to teach. You either know how to do that or you don't, but I'm sure you can learn, but it's definitely one of the most, I'd say that's the most important piece to it, to be completely honest. Mm-hmm. You want those other two or three writers to leave that room thinking, God, I would really love to write with that person again. That was just a fun hang. I felt good about myself today. You know what I mean? If everyone leaves feeling like, oh, God, that was hard, or, oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to win every time you step into a room. You get your first opportunity to write with Ashley Gourley, you got to leave that room with Ashley Gourley wanting to write with you again because you brought in great ideas, or you brought an energy that he's never seen, or you just, you know, you challenged him, or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's always been my MO, is to leave with that feeling.
And then while we're talking about versatility, I mean, you've written with some of country, you are one of country music, contemporary country music's best songwriters. You write with the top songwriters, and then you sit down and you write songs with Ed Sheeran that end up on your EP. Is there a difference? Is a songwriter a songwriter a songwriter, and it doesn't matter the genre? Or do you have to kind of switch gears a little bit when you sit down with somebody like Ed Sheeran because his music is a little bit different?
With Ed, as another example of kind of sit there and shut up, because he's just one of the best I've ever seen in my life write a song. It's probably the same as it would be to write a song with Paul McCartney. But yeah, you have to shift a little bit. Again, it's just a malleable thing. You just have to kind of find, okay, where can I support Ed Sheeran in this? What can I bring to the table here? You know, and you just find that lane and you do that.
And you wrote a couple of songs with Ed that are on your EP, and it just happens that they are, in my opinion, two of the strongest songs on there. And if you don't mind, just talk, you, first of all, I saw that you said you wish that you had asked Ed to cut them. And it's like, you don't have to be that unselfish. Keep them for yourself. And you did. But the songs are Therapy and Electricity. Talk about them.
Yeah, we wrote them both in the same day. The first day I met Ed, you know, we wrote three songs in about a 4-hour period of time. And for a long time, I thought, yeah, okay, he's going to probably want these for himself. And time passed, and we ended up pitching them around to country artists, and everyone loved them, but nobody ended up pulling the trigger on them. And I loved them so much for me. I'd always loved them for me. And so I mustered up the confidence to email Ed and ask him if I could cut them, you know, which isn't a huge, you know, big deal for Ed. It was so nice of him. He wrote me right back and was like, dude, I'd be so happy for you to do this. You must be so excited to be in the artist seat again. And so him supporting me was a really, really big stepping off point in endorsing my artist career again.
First time I heard Electricity, I thought, man, this could be a Lady Antebellum song.
Yeah, it totally could be. Yeah, yeah.
From the autumn nights to the summertime, you know, the more that I know her, I love her. Like a lightning strike, she wouldn't happen twice. And the look in her eyes lets me know that I got her. Most people would call it love, but this feeling is more than that, 'cause she is electricity. Light it up, light it up, light it up, yeah. Come on, love, won't you dive right into me? Light it up like no other. With her blue Levi's and her hair back tied, every revolution starts and ends with her smile.
Do you have intentions of going down that road, or are you going to keep?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I am. I really, you know, I've been building this, and I have over 600,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, and I'm just growing my socials again, and it's been really fun, and I've learned a lot, and I'm excited to have a platform again to put out music that I love for myself. And it's been very cathartic doing this, making this music for myself again. It's actually inspired me in a whole new way. It's almost like a pivot. I feel like every 4 to 5 years in my career, I like to pivot, not turn away, but pivot into, or else I just get burned out and I need to like change, you know, like I can't write in the same space for more than 3 years. I'm like, I'll throw a backpack on and come write anywhere, you know, but it's kind of a pivot for me and a reimagination of myself as an artist.
When you come back to country, does it feel fresh again?
It does. And it made me write in a fresh new way, because I'm now thinking of songs that I would sing for myself. And so I'm writing in a little bit of a different way now. I'm like, oh, wow. I understand why Kenny Chesney won't cut this song. I get it now because I'm experiencing this. Oh, this song doesn't feel like my voice. You know, I'm learning a lot in this process again as a 38-year-old adult making a record and putting out music, you know?
Right. Speaking of Kenny, there's a really interesting video of you on YouTube where you break down writing Get Along instrument by instrument. You've got the tracks there on your screen and you're talking about it. And you talk about, like, just for example, and you're talking about the demo track that was made. There's an organ in there and you say it takes you to church. And it's a really fascinating look, not only into the structure of a song, but into how your mind works.
So this is Get Along, the original demo to the song. I wrote the song with Shane McAnally and Josh Osborne. And so this acoustic guitar with the DB33 organ, I love this organ, the standard Pro Tools organ. Just in this setting, I think it's the gospel setting, just takes you to church, and I love that about it. It just feels like
When we're writing these, the instruments inspire the ideas and vice versa. And that's what inspires me, is pulling up an organ and where does that take you lyrically? Or, you know, that's part of what I can bring to a room when I'm writing.
Then were you surprised? Are you constantly surprised because what I was listening to and hearing on that YouTube video isn't what the final song sounded like from Kenny Chesney. It was quite a bit different. Does that catch you off guard ever, or like?
Oh yeah, always. I'm always like, you know, I'm like, oh my God, what have they done? Oh my God, this is not right. I always freak out, and then I call the other songwriter. I'm like, guys, have you heard this? Oh my God, they say this is not right. We have to fix this. And then I live with it for a little while, and I'm like, okay, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. They took the demo and they made it brilliant.
Oh, I love that story. Because I've heard from some songwriters who are completely, they say that they don't care. You know, they're ambivalent.
Oh, no, I very much care, because a lot of times I end up producing the song. And so I get to see the vision through how I saw the demo. But, you know, not every time, I'm not always right. And so, like, John Cougar, John Deere was a good example of that. Keith kind of, that demo is very different from the way Keith ended up doing it. And I heard the original, the final Keith, and I had a slight panic attack because it was so different than I had imagined it. And it was another example of him being right, you know?
That's right. I'm Mark Twain on the Mississippi. I'm Hemingway with a shot of whiskey. I'm a TV dinner on a tray trying to figure out the wheel. A fortune. I'm a Texaco star. I'm a Gibson guitar. Still a teenage kid trying to go too far. I'm a jukebox waiting in a neon bar.
Any song that Jay Joyce produces catches me off guard. Like he did a song called Born to Love You by Lanco that I wrote. And it was just a little different. It was a little different. It took me a minute to come around to it. But when I did, I came around and realized how brilliant it was.
I was born in a town full of red pine trees. County sign says, follow your dreams. Westbound train makes the whole town shake. Friday night lights decide your fate. I'm born again in a church.
church where the steeple's white. Preacher, priest, Book of John, and my mama cried. Meaning life was in verse 2. Didn't make sense till I found you.
Around and realize how brilliant they are. You know, if people are producing a record, they're doing it for, you know, they're obviously incredible. And so, yeah, I'm never like disappointed.
What's a song that stayed pretty true to your original vision or the sound in your head?
Like Setting the World on Fire was very true to that. And any song that I produce stays true to the demo, because it's how the demo is how I hear the song. Most of the demos I do that I write, that I produce the song, end up sounding like the demo, just 20% beefed up.
Yeah, we got drunk on La Cienega Boulevard, taking pictures of people we thought were stars. It's easy to give into your heart when you're drunk on La Cienega Boulevard. When the song coming out of the speakers was the band that you had on your t-shirt, we were screaming cause all the streets were empty, and you kissed me and we were up all night and we were feeling so good. Yeah, we got a little higher than we probably should. We were in a hotel singing in the hallway lights. We were striking the matches right down to the ashes.
All right, I want to throw some songs at you real quick. We got to wrap this up, I know, and I appreciate the time that you've given me. But it just, if there's a story behind the song, just let her rip. One of the most sonically cool songs of the last several years in country music, Smoke.
Oh, yeah. That Michael Hobby walked in and had a Blackberry Smoke hat on, and we were all sitting around like, what should we write? And I was like, what about a song called Smoke? And they're like, all right, let's do it. And
that's it?
That's it, yeah. It's
Do you ever surprise yourself with, you know, where the idea starts and what the finished product is?
Oh, it's always exciting, man. And then, what gets exciting is, oh, wow, let's compare Smoke to the girl. Like, she likes Smoke. You know, that's interesting. You know, taking it just a title, and then how do you make that interesting?
She comes rolling right over the tip of my tongue so easy. She'll be the first damn thing I want when I start drinking. I'm breathing her in and breathing her out. Once I pick her up, I can't put her down. She smokes. I pull her in nice and slow.
A great, I think, turn of a phrase that was just a huge hit for Brett Eldridge. Want to be that song?
Yeah, God. That was Scooter Caruso, who's a genius lyricist, Travis Hill. That song is everything to me. It's just so simple, but the lines in those verses are just so, so intelligent. I just love everything about it. Scooter came in with a lot of that done and kind of handed it on a silver platter to me and Brett.
A song that's a hit right now, currently, for Brett Young, "Lady." As a dad,
yeah.
Even though my daughter's grown, man, I can relate to nearly every line in that song.
Yeah, you know, Brett, he'd wanted to write a song for his baby girl, and it was right before she was born. We actually sampled. They'd just been to the doctor that morning, and they heard the heartbeat, and he played it on his phone, and I recorded it, and that's what's in the intro of that song.
I remember when I first heard your heartbeat. It had only been 8 weeks. Standing there, staring at that screen was the first time you ever scared me. God knows I don't know exactly what I'm doing, but good news, we got her to get through it. I hope you look just like your mama and love her like I do. You'll see close to perfect patience if you watch her every move. You can always run to daddy, you'll always be my baby. But look at her, baby girl, and you'll learn how to be a lady. Just how to be a lady.
Your songs, there's one underlying theme, I think, through most, if not all, of your country songs, and that is, like, there's a positivity, there's a hope.
Yeah.
Is that deliberate?
Oh, so it's just kind of my MO as a songwriter and a human. It's kind of, I've always been that guy, that's what I've wanted to do with my music, and I kind of feel like that's my purpose, you know. I want to write songs that make people feel like somewhere there is a light on. In your darkest of times, you know, you just remember there's a light on.
Music really, it's your refuge. You still love everything about it, don't you?
I really do. The other night I was writing a song after kind of taking a week off. I was like, said to my wife, I was like, God, it just brings me, I just love it. So I don't know what I would do if I didn't have that. Like, I love the process. Josh Osborne always says this, and Josh gives me a hard time because now I say it, but you got to love the process. If you don't love the process, you shouldn't do it, because you have to, that's how you can do it for 20 years and not be tired of it, you know?
And the process can be kind of a pain in the ass sometimes. It can be.
Oh, most of the times it is. Most of the times it is. It's like, oh my God, are we going to ever figure this out? I want to get home, tired of sitting here,
mm-hmm.
but you got to bear, you know, but then there's the other days where it comes in 45 minutes. But the ones you fight for, you look back on in a year and you're like, God, so glad we fought for that. You know, and it is what it is. Like Confession was one of those, an FGL that we fought for. That was two or three sessions that we fought for that song. I remember right until it was dark at night. And, you know, the wives are like, where are you guys at? Well, we're just grinding on that lyric. And you look back on that now, I'm like, wow, I'm glad we fought for that. The process, man.
Do you sometimes feel like a musical paramedic trying to keep the patient alive?
If that's the case, I usually just pull the plug.
All right. I want to circle back to a question I almost asked earlier, and I'm glad I didn't. This will be the last question of the interview. thank you so much for talking. I love Tom. I can feel your positivity through the phone. I hope the people listening feel it too. What would 1997 UK Ross Copperman think of 2021 Ross Copperman?
Oh God, man. What a great question, Tom. Oh man. That's a really good question. I could spend a few nights like pondering that with a glass of whiskey, man. he'd say he would be proud. He'd be proud of him. Yeah.
That's a perfect answer. Dude, thank you so much.
Tom, thank you, man. This is awesome. What great questions, man.
Rusty barbed wire lines, these fields, gravel dust behind the wheels, drifting like my mind into the rear view. Jet trails couldn't cross the sky. I'm rolling through the open wide, searching for a song to drink a beer to. And trying to find a place to disappear to.
And that'll do it for this month's Write You a Song. Thank you again to Ross Copperman for taking time to share his story and some of the secrets to his success. And thank you for listening. If you like this podcast, again, subscribe, leave a review, share it with other songwriting fans, and you can follow me on Twitter for podcast updates at KNCITom. Next month's guest was actually inspired by this month's guest. Recall towards the beginning of the interview, Ross talked about being inspired himself by a guy from his hometown who had already made a name for himself in Nashville as a songwriter.
Yeah, I didn't know that writing songs was something you could do. Although I always grew up hearing about this guy named Tommy Lee James, who was from Roanoke, Virginia. And I always heard this big shot dude, Tommy Lee James, was a big hit country songwriter from Roanoke, Virginia. And I thought, God, that is so cool. That guy went from my small town to Nashville and he made it.
And I thought that'd be a cool guest to follow this interview up with, especially since he's written songs like these.
She's my kind of rain, like love in a drunken sky. If you see him, tell him I wish him well. Are you with me? Are you with me? Life ain't always beautiful. Tears will fall sometimes. Life ain't always beautiful, but it's a beautiful ride.
With a little help from Ross Copperman, Tommy Lee James is our guest next time on Write You a Song.
Some days I miss your smile.